Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
Now, we are winding down the winter wheat season, but we have seen somewhat of a modest increase in drought coverage as we've headed toward the end of the season. That may have taken a little bit of a bite off of some of the crop production potential in the Northwest. And it's really that northwestern drought that has pushed winter wheat drought coverage 24% of the production area by July 1st. That's twice what we saw in early June. And again, that's really coming on strong in some of our northwestern states.
That's USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey.
Relatively stable numbers for hay production area in drought and cattle inventory in drought. Not much change during the month of June. We kind of traded off improvement across the Great Plains and the Midwest for some deterioration in the western U.S. Overall, 20% of the U.S. hay production area in drought on July 1st, along with 18% of the U.S. cattle inventory.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
There could be no better birthday present for America than the phenomenal victory we achieved just hours ago when Congress passed the one big, beautiful bill to make America great again.
Speaking on July 3rd in Iowa, President Donald Trump on the heels of the passage of the big, beautiful bill.
Just as I promised, we're making the Trump tax cuts permanent and delivering no tax on tips, no tax on overtime, and no tax on Social Security for our great seniors. And we will ignite trillions of dollars in economic growth, increase take-home pay for the typical family by more than $10,000 a year. And very importantly for Iowa, this bill rescues over 2 million family farms from the so-called estate tax or the death tax, in other words. Before Trump, you were losing farms to the banks. Before Trump, you were losing the farms like nobody's ever seen before. You love your children. You don't feel so well. You pass away. You leave everything to your children, and they have to pay a big estate tax or a death tax, as we call it. And they couldn't do it. They go out and borrow money, and all of a sudden the bank is foreclosing on the farm. Not going to happen. You have no more estate tax. You have no more death tax to pay. Now, that's if you love your children. If you don't love your children, it doesn't matter. Just forget about what I said. Not going to help. But if you love them, or if you love somebody that you're leaving it to, think of that. No death tax, no estate tax, no going to the banks and borrowing from, in some cases, a fine banker, and in some cases, Shylocks and bad people. But they took away a lot of family. They destroyed a lot of families, but we did the opposite. So just remember, to me, it's so important. And it was mostly important for places like we're at right now. It's really, I'm so proud of it. At the same time, this bill cuts $1.5 trillion in spending. So wasteful spending is being cut by $1.5 trillion. And I got to tell you, I want to thank Republican congressmen and women, because what they did is incredible last night. And the Senate, the Republican Senate, we got, not with all of the things we did with the tax cuts and rebuilding our military, not one Democrat voted for us. And I think we use it in the campaign that's coming up, the midterms, because we got to beat them. But all of the things that we've given, and they wouldn't vote only because they hate Trump. But I hate them too, you know that? So it's sort of, I really hate them. I cannot stand them because I really believe they hate our country. You want to know the truth? But it kicks illegal aliens off of Medicaid and food stamps and allows us to hire 3,000 new Border Patrol agents and 10,000 new ICE agents, and they are great patriots, the Border Patrol and ICE, to carry out the largest deportation operation in the history of our country. And I don't like saying that. I don't like saying that. But we have a country. We have a country to run, and we have so many people coming in that shouldn't be here. And they did. They came in from prisons, and they came in from drugs and gangs and drug lords, the worst in the world. They came in from mental institutions. They emptied mental institutions into our wonderful country. And I know exactly what's going on in Iowa. You had some horrible crime in Iowa caused by illegal aliens. But we're getting them the hell out of here. We have no choice.
And this is Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
I don't think having the trade deficit per se is a bad thing. So, you know, what we're importing is less of a concern. What I worry about is that we're going to have trouble exporting the things that we're good at producing. And the fact that exports are stagnant after sort of a general upward trend for a long time is what really concerns me.
Kansas State ag economist Jenny Ift on trade. Mark Edelman's an Iowa State ag economist.
If we think about who are our top ag export markets, it's Canada, Mexico, China, and the European Union. And then you ask the question of who, as far as the trade negotiations, we've been poking in the eye to get them to try to strike a better trade. Well, it's that same group. Perhaps the new one on the front is we'd like to export more to India. It's a possibility. Japan has always been a good customer too, but I'm reminded of the story that Barry always used to tell about when he was on this was back 40 years ago in a different environment, but he was on a League of Women Voters panel to discuss the high price of meat with somebody that represented the beef industry at that time, and the cowboy got flustered about how much steak cost when they asked the question. And he said, "Steak is good for you. Buy it and shut up." Barry then commented, "How many pounds of beef do you think you sold with that steak?" So, I mean, there's some real questions about if we make our potential allies really uncertain about our goals in trade negotiations publicly, will we be able to get them to come around to settle on a positive trade policy for us when the dust settles? That's a big question that we'll see if the president can pull a rabbit out of his hat.
From trade to land values. Dr. Brad Lubin, University of Nebraska at Lincoln, ag economist.
Farmland values have effectively doubled in the last 20 years in real terms. It has been a prime investment opportunity, and some of the non-ag sector is recognizing that that's a great opportunity relative, or it has been a great opportunity relative to other markets. But if you also look at the picture ahead, you see concerns about profitability, you see concerns about cash flow, you see concerns about future market prospects, and you're wondering, how can we continue to drive these land values where we're at? Land values have gone up and they've continued to climb, perhaps as a result of the last few years of very strong profitability, maybe accumulated capital, and we still have other farmers being the predominant buyer of farmland. We talk about outside investors, we talk about equity money getting into agriculture, and yet it's farmers bidding against farmers that are driving these farmland values higher. So it's still driven by fundamentals in the ag market to date. And there is question and expectation that it may level off here with current economic concerns in agriculture, but it's still a relatively strong, it's got a strong base, and it's looks like it's a relatively strong market for the time being. So I've still given it a thumbs up, even if I'm less certain about the future direction here.
Edelman adds,
I see farmland values softening this next year, in part because I don't think the net farm income is not going to be there as to justify a continued rise in farmland value that we've seen in recent past. So I'm going to go slight thumbs down.
And Ift with a final thought.
This is a strength for those who are only and are involved in farming. A strong balance sheet, it does help you weather rough economic times, and there's a lot of factors other than the farm economy that do prop up farmland values. I'd also say the softening might be the sign of a healthy farmland market. The farmland market should reflect the underlying economic fundamentals. It's as if we go beyond the softening that I worry about. Also, strong farmland values do create some challenges for young and beginning and small farms.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Well, some are highlights, some are lowlights.
Looking back over his 40-plus year career, Mark Gold, founder, Top Third Ag Marketing.
I would say the biggest lowlight was when President Carter embargoed the Russians in 1979. It killed our wheat market. We've never fully recovered, though we've seen, wheat at $12 in Chicago and higher in Minneapolis, but we haven't been able to see sustained growth. And the Russians, took that as a sign that the U.S. isn't going to be a consistent supplier and develop their own supplies. And that has hurt our wheat market over the last 50 years. Unless we have some kind of weather market or, there's a real demand issue somewhere, it's hard for wheat to sustain these rallies out here. So that was one of the lowlights. I would say some of the highlights in the 80s, We had the drought in 1980, 83, and 88. I've been kind of a bull. I was on the floor. I was on the trading floor as a member starting in 1977. So I saw the root seed deal with the grains and the July-November bean spread going to $3 over. As a bull, you know, those were probably three of my best years in the business. I just love a big bull market. So those were certainly highlights. Again, another low light is when the exchange went public. You know, I understand the reasoning for it. I didn't own my seat. I sold my seat in 1995. I bought it in 1977. And I made, one heck of a nice profit on that. But I don't know that I would have voted to turn it public. I think, these algorithm traders and the extent of which the funds are trading now and the high-frequency traders, they've taken a lot of the fundamental reasoning out of this market. They've got the money and the power and the speed of the computers, and I just personally don't think it's great for the market. But I think what we have to keep in mind is that the markets are still subject to supply and demand. And I can gripe about the algo traders and high-frequency traders and the funds, but they can't do what they do unless the fundamentals basically agree with it. Now, they get carried away, to the long side. They get carried away to the short side. And I think, for a lot of your listeners out there, how do you trade this thing? Well, first of all, if you're a farmer out there, don't speculate. You make your money farming. You don't make your money speculating. If you're such a good speculator, you don't need to be farming. And we know that only 7% of outside speculators can beat the pros in Chicago. So I think it's a kind of a fool's game to try. But the supply and demand will control these markets in the long run. In the short run, the funds and the algos can certainly move their weight around. I don't think that's good. I'm an old school guy. I'm 71, and, I prefer the old style of doing things. Maybe it wasn't the fastest. Maybe, you had to wait for your fills, back in the 70s and 80s, but it got better over time. And I just, I prefer the old ways, but that's just, being an old codger. If I was 25 years old, I'd want to know everything I could about computers and AI and the rest of it out here.
What will he be watching moving forward?
But if we make new highs in the crude oil, something is popping there. That should be good for the grain markets, in my opinion. I think the bean oil will go through the roof. We'll find some place to get rid of the meal. Corn, wheat, all could go considerably higher out here.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
This bill includes the largest tax cut in American history, the largest spending cut in American history, the largest border security investment in American history, although I must tell you, if you saw last month, they had zero people coming through our border, zero. I'm not sure that's even possible.
Speaking at the Iowa State Fairgrounds last Thursday, President Donald Trump talking about passage of the Big Beautiful Bill.
Last month, American-born workers gained 830,000 new jobs, a record. That's American. While the illegal aliens lost 340,000. Now, we don't want bad for them, but look, we have a country to run, and we want to have them come in, and we want to have them help our farmers. You probably saw I got myself into a little trouble because I said, I don't want to take people away from the farmers. And we're going to do something I think that's going to be good because we want all the criminals out. Everybody agrees that we're finding the criminals, the murderers, the drug dealers. We're getting them the hell out of here. But the farmers, some of the farmers, many of you sitting right here, I have four friends right in the fifth row. But some of the farmers, they've had people working for them for years. And we're going to do something. We're working with Christy. And we're going to do something that we're going to sort of put the farmers in charge. And if a farmer's been with one of these people that work so hard, they bend over all day. We don't have too many people can do that, but they work very hard and they know them very well. And some of the farmers are literally, they cry when they see this happen. If a farmer's willing to vouch for these people, in some way, Christy, I think we're going to have to just say that's going to be good, right? You know, we're going to be good with it, because we don't want to do it where we take all of the workers off the farms. We want the farms to do great like they're doing right now. So Christy Noem has done a fantastic job, and Tom Homan. And we're working on legislation right now. Susie, right? We're working on legislation right now where farmers, look, they know better. They work with them for years. You had cases that were not here, but just even over the years, where people have worked for a farm on a farm for 14, 15 years, and they get thrown out pretty viciously. And we can't do it. We got to work with the farmers and people that have hotels and leisure properties, too. We're going to work with them, and we're going to work very strong and smart, and we're going to put you in charge. We're going to make you responsible. And I think that that's going to make a lot of people happy. Now, serious radical right people, who I also happen to like a lot, they may not be quite as happy, but they'll understand, won't they? Do you think so? Madam Secretary, look at you with a white hat on. Do you think they'll understand that? You're the one that brought this whole situation up. Brooke Rollins brought it up, and she said, so we have a little problem. The farmers are losing a lot of people, and we figured it out, and we have some great stuff being written, and let the farmers be responsible. And then if the farmers don't do a good job, we'll throw them the hell out of the country. We'll let the illegals stay, and we'll throw the farmer the hell out, okay? Get ready, farmer, I'm telling you. But violent, now the, okay, so the fake news will write that. Donald Trump will throw farmers out of our country. They will write it. Because whenever I'm sarcastic, you know, when you can't be sarcastic as a politician. Well, if you're me, you can't be if you're so I want to say I was only kidding. No, the fake news will write it. Donald Trump wants all farmers thrown the hell out of our country. The audience booed the hell out of him. There was no boo. No, they're fake news. That's why nobody watches them anymore.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
I want to focus on two core issues that are top priorities for our industry in this reauthorization.
Nick Friant with Cargill testifying recently before a House Ag Subcommittee reauthorizing the Grain Standards Act.
First, investment in grain grading technology to speed and improve the inspection process. And second, strengthening the emergency waiver authority to ensure continuity and flexibility in grain export inspection services. The U.S. grain inspection system has long set a global benchmark for quality and reliability. While this basic framework of grain standards has remained stable over time, the international grain market has become increasingly competitive. Thus, our inspection and grading systems must evolve accordingly. Today, the Federal Grain Inspection Service still relies on legacy technologies for determining grade factors that ultimately influence a commodity's value and fungibility. FGIS must prioritize research, development, and validation of modern grain grading technologies that improve accuracy, speed, and consistency. The agency should actively collaborate with industry and academia to identify innovative tools that can reduce human error and improve grading objectivity. Furthermore, we believe that new technologies can help the agency drive efficiencies, reduce costs, and address the staffing challenges it faces, all of which ultimately benefit U.S. farmers, agribusiness, and rural economies. We believe the U.S. Department of Agriculture should allocate dedicated resources, both staffing and funding, to expedite this process. And GFA and its members are ready and willing to partner with USDA and FGIS to pilot and implement new technologies, provided there is a clear pathway for scientific validation, standardization, and eventual deployment. Therefore, we have worked with our partners at the American Association of Grain Inspection and Weighing Agencies and the American Soybean Association, who are also testifying today, on language for the U.S. Grain Standards Reauthorization Act that will provide FGIS with the necessary tools to focus their resources on this important issue. We encourage this committee to approve this proposal. The second central area we urge Congress to address is the need for enhanced flexibility in issuing emergency waivers of official inspection requirements during service disruptions. The 2015 reauthorization wisely included provisions requiring FGIS to act transparently when official services are disrupted at export ports due to withdrawal of a service by delegated state agencies. Let me be clear. The U.S. industry strongly supports the requirement for mandatory official inspection and weighing of export grain. It is fundamental to preserving market integrity and the credibility of our supply chain. But during natural disasters or other force majeure events, or in rare instances where buyers and sellers mutually agree to waive inspection due to service disruptions, the Act must allow for pragmatic flexibility. We recommend that Congress revise the Act to clarify the definition of emergency and authorize FGIS to issue conditional waivers. Further, the waiver would be applied provided that the buyer and seller voluntarily agree. The absence of an official inspection does not impair the transaction, and such a waiver would not undermine the objectives of the Act. Establishing transparent and predictable contingency planning for future disruptions would provide exporters, importers, and customers with confidence that the flow of U.S. grains can continue during unexpected challenges without compromising overall integrity of the system. While I have highlighted two key priorities, we are ready to discuss other elements of the Act, including advisory committee functionality, ensuring timely appointments and maintaining a quorum, clarify use of user fees. We support FGIS's final rule that decoupled Schedule A fees from tonnage-based rolling average fees. We will continue to monitor the impact of the new fees on the industry moving forward. And user fee cap reform. Limit the cap to USGSA-regulated commodities. The U.S. grain inspection system is a foundation of our country's reputation as a reliable agricultural supplier. Timely reauthorization of the U.S. Grain Standards Act, combined with the enhancements we've outlined today, will ensure that our inspection system continues to meet the high expectation of U.S. producers and our global customers.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
940 pages as it's coming out of the Senate, and 384 of those pages deal with tax issues. So this is primarily a tax bill.
Washburn University tax law specialist Roger McCohen.
Almost 40% of it, actually over 40% of it, are tax provisions. And the cornerstone of that, and the foundational aspect of that, is it continues existing tax law. So where we're at right now, under the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, a lot of those provisions are set to expire at the end of 2025 unless Congress can continue that, those provisions. And that's what this bill does, plus add some of the president's priorities that were mentioned on the campaign trail, such as no tax on tips and no tax on overtime and being able to deduct interest payments on U.S.-made automobiles and some other things. So this is very major tax legislation.
He notes the big, beautiful bill is big for ag.
Well, I think there are farmers and ranchers out there. The business-related provisions are absolutely critical. Bonus depreciation would be restored to 100% first-year bonus depreciation for assets purchased and placed in service on or after January 19 of this year. Currently, bonus depreciation is 40%. It would be 20% next year if nothing changes, and then it goes to zero. And then also expense method depreciation. That would be doubled under this legislation, and that those are big in terms of spurring investments. That's going to be big for agribusiness and selling machinery and equipment. That's just huge all the way up and down the scale. And there are other provisions in there that are also important. We've got some interest deductibility issues. We've got some casualty loss provisions that are in there, a whole host of provisions that are important for farmers and ranchers. But one that's very broad and not just tailored to farmers and ranchers is what would happen to income tax rates, the bracket amounts. Those rates would go up for every taxpayer category except the 10% category if Congress does nothing. So that's huge. When you put all this together, plus one I don't want to forget to mention on the business side of things is the qualified business income deduction, the 199A deduction. That would go away at the end of this year. That's 20% deduction on your business income. So if I'm a farmer and I have $200,000 of business income, that's a $40,000 deduction I get this year, which would be zero next year. So my effective tax rate would be much higher.
Why passage of the bill is so important.
What's been the history in the past is Congress has waited until the fall to even start doing reconciliation. Then we don't even get a bill until shortly before Christmas. And that is just nerve-wracking. It's terrible for practitioners trying to advise clients. It's bad for somebody like me that's trying to advise practitioners as to how to advise clients. And it's horrible for the IRS that has to then redo forms. You can end up with a late filing season, and it just becomes an absolute headache for everyone. So actually, I'm real glad we're having this conversation now. And we might see, you know, some of the farm-related provisions are also in here. That's unusual. We usually do a separate farm bill, but they are trying to do some of that in this bill, too.
Of course, that big, beautiful bill did pass both the House, the Senate, the Conference Committee, and both chambers, and signed into law.
Very simply, the one big, beautiful bill would deliver the strongest border on earth, the strongest economy on earth, the strongest military on earth, and ensure the United States of America will remain the strongest country anywhere on this beautiful planet of ours.
President Trump speaking Thursday in Iowa. It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Most regions of the country report improvements in drought coverage starting July. How does that apply to crops and commodities? USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey says for corn and soybeans in drought for the period ending July 1st.
Corn production area in drought, that number was 21% on June 3rd. Not too bad, but it's gotten better since, and only 12% of U.S. corn production area in drought. Even better for soybeans, we saw a halving of drought coverage going from 16% in early June to 8%.
Shrinking drought coverage was more notable for southern summer crops such as cotton, peanuts, and rice. However, drought expansion in the northern plains and Pacific Northwest is recorded for crops such as barley and spring wheat.
The U.S. barley crop, over half, 56% in drought on July 1st. That is more than double the June 3rd number of 24%. And also on July 1st, spring wheat area in drought, 29%, up from 19% on June 3rd.
I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.